This is episode 19 of Everyday Wellness, behind the scenes with Predominantly Paleo, with our guest, Jennifer Robbins. I'm Dr. Kelly Donahue, clinical health psychologist, here with my co-host, Cynthia Thurlow, functional nutritionist and nurse practitioner. Let's get started. Welcome to Everyday Wellness. Wellness is the result of the decisions that you make every day. It's your mindset and the thoughts you believe. Wellness is the food you put in your body and the relationship you have with yourself and others. Wellness is your work and meaning. Join us on Everyday Wellness as we explore ways that you can choose wellness today. Good morning. This is Everyday Wellness. And today we have a special treat. We have Jennifer Robbins, who is the author and, she has many hats. She is involved with Predominantly Paleo and also is the manufacturer of our favorite gluten-free, junk-free bread called Legit Bread Company. So it's really a pleasure to have you on this morning, Jennifer. And what I'm going to do is just quickly tell our listeners a little bit about you. You very nicely, you know, gave me a synopsis of, you know, what's gone on in your life to kind of, you know, provide this fervent kind of background that you've grown your business in. And so Jennifer mentions that in her 26th year, you know, her health went from being, you know, as she reported, she had incredible energy and stamina and a zest for life. And then all of a sudden in her 26th year, that all changed. She had a slow and steady downward decline into a chronic illness, which presented initially as panic attacks, followed by autoimmune disease, a Lyme diagnosis, and finally an irrecoverable crash. You were given 20 different diagnoses from a variety of healthcare professionals, but ultimately between food choices, pregnancies, and life stresses, your body really gave up and stopped being in a state of homeostasis. The past 3 years you've spent seeking, digging, praying, sorting, researching, crying, and nourishing your way back to stability. And, you know, you touch on the standard American diet, which obviously we'll talk about in a second. But, you know, you noticed that when you started transitioning from just being gluten-free to grain-free, as well as dairy-free, that's when you started to feel a whole lot better. So welcome. We're really excited to have you on this morning.
Well, thanks for inviting me. I'm glad to be here.
Absolutely. You know, your journey has been so inspiring, and clearly for so many of us, our own personal health struggles become a powerful impetus for seeking answers. And then we, you know, jump down that proverbial rabbit hole, which helped you make the connections between nutrition and health, wellness and vitality. Was there any one particular food for you that was easiest or hardest to transition to?
So I gave up gluten first when I was diagnosed with thyroid disease. Mm-hmm. And so it was after the births of my first two babies. They were back to back. They were less than a year apart.
Wow.
I started feeling horrible. And it was right before my husband was deploying. And so I thought, okay, you know, clearly I'm just stressed, and this is a really pivotal time, and I have a 5-month-old and a 17-month-old, and, you know, I'm just overwhelmed. But I ended up going to the doctor, and that's when I was diagnosed with Hashimoto's. And so I was really resistant to going on medication at first. Mm-hmm. Because I just felt like that was a rabbit hole I did not want to go down. And if I needed one med, where would it end? So I started with food specifically, and I gave up gluten. Mm-hmm. And I kind of gave up dairy at the time and tried to limit, you know, refined sugars and stuff like that. However, I would say that I gave things up, but I ate a ton of processed foods, a ton of, you know, frozen meals and things out of packages, because I was just trying to do anything to make life easier. And I had these two little babies and my husband was gone. And so it was a lot. It was a lot to take on. But I felt like giving up gluten really was not hard, because there are so many great substitutions out there. Dairy was much harder. I feel like, and it's still hard, you know. Luckily now I can tolerate it a little bit better, so I can have it here and there. But at the time I was like, Okay, cheese substitutes are just not cheese. There's
we all know that.
Yeah, like I don't care who you are. Like, it doesn't taste like cheese. Mm-hmm. It has a weird aftertaste. It might melt, but it's the textures. Everything was just wrong about mm-hmm. cheese substitutes. So that's always been the hardest because, I grew up in Texas. I am a Tex-Mex fanatic. Yeah, gluten didn't seem to be like it was that hard. It was really when I started going more paleo several years down the line after that transition that I felt like, wow, this is really, I have to completely rethink the way that I'm eating. And because it was a mindset shift at that point, it wasn't just what am I giving up, but what am I going to include? How am I going to get more veggies? How do I avoid processed foods? How do I make things from scratch that taste like the things that I really am drawn to, which are not good for me all the time? Mm-hmm. And so I feel like that was probably more challenging, but in a good way, because it made me really tap into my creative side and think like, okay, if I want a chimichanga, how am I going to make that? And how am I going to make it with these raw ingredients that mm-hmm. are safe for me, but still satisfy me on an emotional, aesthetically pleasing level?
And I'm curious if we could go back just for a minute. When you were first diagnosed and trying to figure out what to do, how did you come to the idea of using food or of changing your diet? Was that something that your physician presented, or was that something you sought out on your own?
So I had seen so many doctors over the years, and I think that I just sort of reached a point where I was tired of, I liked the lab testing and the digging and let's find out what's going on. And luckily I got to a point where I had some integrative physicians who were really trying to help me uncover what was going on. And I'm grateful for that. But it seemed like this endless search, because when you are sick, there are a lot of things that are going wrong. Like, it's never just Lyme or just thyroid mm-hmm. or just one virus. If you have one virus, you probably have many viruses that are, out of control. And if you have one, bad bacteria in your gut, you probably have many, or you have parasites, or you have whatever it is. It was where do you even start? And, you look in your medicine cabinet, you've got 40 supplements you're taking every day. And then I was taking antibiotics for Lyme that were made for, a 200-pound man. And I was like, this is just too much. And so it was at that point that I said, there has to be something else that is better than this. I just felt like I was doing my body a disservice by throwing so much at it. And when you have methylation issues and you're not detoxing, you can take all the supplements in the world, but you're not necessarily processing them correctly. And if your gut is off, then you're not even digesting them, and absorbing them. So I just got to a point where I felt like maybe I need to rethink how I'm approaching. And, you've heard the phrase before, you can't kill your way to health. Like, you can't just kill every bacteria mm-hmm. in your body, because we are 98% other microbes, other DNA. And so if you can't kill everything off and you don't want to, then there has to be a way to support the immune system from a different vantage point. And so that's when I started thinking about food more, and the quality of food, and was I getting a vast array of nutrients from my food? And I hadn't really been. I was just kind of squeaking by on my, gluten-free, sort of dairy-free diet, and it just wasn't enough. And so that's when I started really digging in.
That's a really powerful connection. I'm Western medicine trained and worked in ER medicine and cardiology for, 16, almost 18 years. And, mm-hmm. For me, I got to a point where I just got so tired of writing prescriptions and, desperately trying to encourage my patients to change their nutrition, to change mm-hmm. their diet. We've just unfortunately as a society gotten into this mindset of, food is just this passive kind of, food is just a conduit to the next thing. People really are so profoundly disconnected from food and nutrition and the importance of it. And we're so focused on I'm just going to take that pill and it'll fix me. And, you know, as human beings, we're so much more complex than that. So I love that you started making those connections. And I know, you know, for so many of us that have come kind of full circle, you know, those of us that are Western medicine and functionally trained as well, you just start to realize there's more to it than just giving a pill.
Absolutely.
Or just eating a processed bar. Like I constantly am having conversations with clients that will say, well, can't you just give me some processed stuff so I, you know, when I travel or I'm doing this or I'm doing that? And I was like, that's fine. It's all about balance, but I really mm-hmm. want you to eat real food.
Right.
Your body desperately needs that. That's why even, you know, I was being asked recently, a lot of people that deal with weight issues, I mean, their bodies are intrinsically starving. They don't look like they're starving.
Right, exactly.
But their cells and their bodies are starving for food and nourishment, and they're mm-hmm. just not getting it.
Can you tell us a little bit about how you came up with a lot of these recipes and how you decided to pull them together in a cookbook?
That's funny. So when I first started blogging before I got to the cookbook phase, because that started a little bit earlier on, I was just trying to figure out what, you know, how do I piece together these different ingredients in order to make something that I would enjoy eating? Because for me, if I'm just shoving it down and I don't like it, I don't feel like it nourishes in the same way that if I can find the right ingredient combination that's healthy, but I really like the flavors and I really enjoy eating it, I feel like that is going to serve my body better. So I started blogging just sort of in secret. I wasn't sharing anything with anyone because I didn't really know that I was doing anything helpful. And I also didn't know that blogging was like a thing that people did. You know, like I just thought it was a hobby on the side. You didn't have to share it with people. And then I learned like, oh no, people do this full time, all the time. And so it's sort of, you know, after a year of blogging in secret, I ended up putting it on social media like, okay, maybe I'll share this. Maybe somebody else will benefit. And so I've always approached it from the standpoint of anybody can make salmon and kale and call it healthy. And that's great. And some people have really low standards for what tastes good to them, right? I mean, not, I don't want to say low, but like they're happy to eat anything as long as it has nutrition, or they're happy to eat anything as long as it makes them feel satiated at the end of the meal. I am not that simplistic, and I wish that I was. I'm also not the person who can have like the exact same thing for breakfast every morning mm-hmm. without getting sick of it by maybe day three. So I knew that I needed to, if I was going to stick to this as a lifestyle, as a healing modality, as a commitment that I was making to serve my body best, I knew that I was going to have to put food together in a way that was really satisfying to my taste buds, that was really satisfying emotionally, and all of those things, and that I really wanted to enjoy it. Because if you are coming off of a standard American diet, it's really hard to eat that kale and feel like this is what I've been missing all my life. I mean, yes, maybe your body feels a little bit better, but it might not completely be the reward that you need to stick with it. So
weight gain is one of many symptoms that our hormones are in decline, especially as we navigate perimenopause into menopause. Dr. Anna, who is a great friend of mine, is an OBGYN who's treated thousands of women just like you and I who experience increasing dryness and even pain in the bedroom as they get older. Jolva is the solution Dr. Anna formulated for her own clients, and it has since been loved by over 100,000 women. It's a feminine cream with DHEA that helps the body regenerate moisture from the inside out. 92.8% of Jolva users experienced a significant improvement in the first 4 to 8 weeks. Get 10% off your first purchase of Jolva by using the link dranna.com/Cynthia. That's dranna.com/Cynthia and get 10% off your first purchase. Americans spend an average of 90% of their time indoors and take about 20,000 breaths a day. The indoor air that we breathe is 2 to 5 times more polluted than outdoor air. and in some circumstances, up to 100 times more polluted, according to the EPA. And did you know that air pollution is responsible for nearly 7 million premature deaths globally? So what's the solution? I want to introduce you to a product by Air Doctor that has captured the attention of established media outlets like CNN, ABC, and more. Air Doctor filters out 99.99% of dangerous contaminants so that your lungs don't have to. This includes pollutants such as allergens, pollen, pet dander, dust mites, mold spores, and even bacteria and viruses that have the potential to go on and make us sick. Air Doctor comes with a 30-day, breathe easy, money-back guarantee. So if you don't love it, just send it back for a refund minus shipping. Head to airdoctorpro.com and use code Cynthia. You'll receive up to $300 off air purifiers. Exclusive to podcast customers, you will also receive a free 3-year warranty on any unit, which is an additional $84 in value. Look at the special offer by going to airdoctorpro.com and use promo code Cynthia. I absolutely love my air filters. They're an integral component to ensuring that the air that my family breathes in our home is as safe as possible.
That is sort of my inspiration for everything. I want to take things that like I loved in my past life and make them in my new life in a way that satisfies me, that I feel like I want to eat the leftovers the next day. I'm excited to make this again. I'm excited to, you know, would I share this recipe with somebody walking down the street who just had fast food and feel like maybe they'd like it? That's kind of who I want to appeal to as well as myself. And so that's been the inspiration really for everything. And that's, you know, my first cookbook was a Southern paleo cookbook. And so I'm like, okay, but how do we get fried chicken back in this situation? You know, how do we get Tex-Mex? How do we get gumbo? How do we get like all the things that I grew up in Houston eating without them being god awful for
right.
you? So that's been really like every day, if I just write a recipe for the blog, if I write for a cookbook, it's always, but what's going to taste really good and satisfy me on levels more than just, yes, this is nutritious. And so I just kind of continue with that path because I feel like if anything, it fills a void that, that maybe is the one thing that makes it really hard for people to transition. Mm-hmm. And if I can fill that void and bring better health to others, then I feel like that's accomplishing a whole lot.
No, and I'm so grateful because I think the thing that I have really struggled with, I've been gluten-free for 7 years and I reversed an autoimmune issue by eliminating gluten. Yeah. And then had some health issues a couple years ago and it took me 3 years to get my health back. And I had to finally really eliminate grains and dairy. And much like you said, dairy was hard. And I wasn't eating that much of it, but it must have just been inflaming my body so much. And so, you know, having the opportunity to, you know, pick up a cookbook and be able to, you know, any recipe I've used of yours has worked flawlessly and has been, you know, there's no strange or odd ingredients that have necessitated me having to drive all over Northern Virginia looking for them. So for that, I'm very grateful. But, you know, I love to hear the process because I'm not intrinsically a creative person. So I love to hear, you know, when creative people really put their thinking hats on and really, you know, devote a lot of emotional energy to, you know, it's solving a problem. You know, the problem is I can no longer eat X. So how do I go about, you know, recreating something that tastes like that? Like your meatloaf is really, really popular in our house. And I have boys and, you know, now I have to make doubles of everything.
Right.
The portions are just becoming larger and larger by the day, which is frightening my grocery bills, bottom line. But I'm just so grateful. So
Thank you. Really nice
to have you on. But out of like curiosity, when you are writing a cookbook or you have a concept, I mean, how long does it take you from beginning of end to come? Because I'm sure there's tons of recipe tastings and all sorts of, you know, I'm sure there's just, it's a lot more time than those of us on the outside probably realizes. But when you come up with a concept from start to finish, how long does that process actually take?
So it's usually a year total, but funny enough, that a lot of that is like, is not necessary. I'm not necessarily part of it. So it usually takes me about 3 months to do all of the recipe creating and writing and photos. Sometimes I get an extra month for the photos, but I usually try to take them as I go along. And then once I turn in the manuscript, then, you know, it starts the initial editing process. It gets laid out. The graphics get added. So it's really kind of a lengthy process. Sometimes, you know, depending on the publisher who's piecing it together, sometimes it gets done in a quicker way. But with my publisher, it's pretty much a full year. And it also depends on, you know, what it gets slotted for as far as the season of sales. So you might start a year prior for a fall release cookbook that's got a theme or an idea that makes sense for fall, like my kids cookbook, for example. Mm-hmm. I started it the year prior, but we knew that we wanted it to be released around back to school because that made the most sense. So there's so much that goes into the process. And then I get looped back in towards the end with final edits, and that big manuscript gets sent to my house, and I have to go over with a fine tooth comb and hopefully not miss too many things. But inevitably, you know, there's always a few mistakes in a book, and that's sort of unavoidable. But yeah, it is quite the process.
Oh, I can only imagine.
You have a lot of successful cookbooks, so I'm imagining you must enjoy part of the process.
I do. You know, it's hard because I like the creative process, so that's my favorite. I was a ballet dancer for 20 years, and when I got really sick, I realized that I wasn't really tapping into that part of my brain that fulfilled me. And so what I found with, you know, creating recipes was I was finally using that again, and I was using it in a way that could help other people. So it just, for me, it was sort of an endorphin release. And so I do like the creative process of the cookbook. I like putting together the table of contents. I like trying to figure out the names for the chapters. I like creating the recipes, taking the photos. The hard part is anytime you put your work out there, there are going to be people who are nasty. And I've gotten better about just accepting that that is a fact, and there's not anything that I can do about people who are miserable with their lives and come after me. But not to say that, you know, when you get those 1-star reviews, even if they're arbitrary, even if they don't make sense, you know, I got a 1-star review this time because my most recent book has potatoes, and they said that my entire book of 75 recipes was completely useless. Those were the words. And I'm like, okay, well, first of all, let's like backtrack real quick, because potatoes have been paleo approved in the paleo community for a few years. I understand there are people with nightshade sensitivities and, you know, things that prevent them from eating potatoes. And I totally hear that. And I offer subs in all of my recipes. Hey, sub sweet potatoes if you can't do white potatoes, or, you know, do something else if you don't want to do sweet potatoes. But anyway, I can't say that like that's my favorite part of the process, because it always stings, even if it doesn't make sense or if it's not true. But, you know, to see in black and white that somebody thinks your work is useless is crappy, you know. I put it into perspective most of the time, and I look at, you know, big picture is for every 1-star review, I have hopefully 100 good reviews. And so it's not the majority of people. It's not, you know, it doesn't speak to how hard I work or my ethics or what I try to offer people. But that part's hard. And like each time I've released a book, I've said to myself, like, okay, here we go. There's going to be people who hate this. And that is part of putting your work out there into the universe, is that it will attract the bad with the good. And so, but yeah, I do like creating the work. I don't like putting it out there for ridicule, but that is just kind of that's what you have to deal with when you are willing to put it out there. So
yeah, and that's hard to, I think that's hard for anyone. I know I don't have a cookbook, but this summer I have done a big launch and I had a lot of lead magnets on social media, and every once in a while you get a troll that just wanted to have an argument with you. And initially I would try to engage with them. And, you know, of course, it's my mindset. I was like, well, I'm going to convince them that, you know, their perspective, there's another way to look at it. And now I just delete.
It's not even worth
it. Nope. Yeah. I'm like, if you're going to argue, then, and you're not going to, I think there's a way to politely disagree with people. But if you are at the point where you just can't even be polite, I'm like, I just can't even deal with that. I won't, the emotional energy it's taking up, I'm expending, is just not, it doesn't make any sense.
1,000%. Yeah. I've started doing that on social media more. I used to try to like really engage and like, well, let me see if I can help explain. And, you know, and then I just realized like, they're not looking to be persuaded. Right. They're not looking to learn from you. They're not looking to, you know, see if you have something to offer them. They're looking for an argument. And so if you give it to them, they're it's just going to fuel the fire. So, yes, I've definitely learned to, I guess, either block more easily or not feel like just because you have a social media presence that allows other people to walk on you and that you have to be okay with it. I think there's enough negativity in the world that I am more comfortable now saying, here's my boundary and you're not allowed to cross it, you know? And so you definitely learn to do that more over time. So that's just a lesson that comes with the work.
With wisdom, right?
We could call it that, sure.
With wisdom.
I think that's so important, though. It's the side that we don't often see or have people talk about, but it's very real. And I think, you know, the mindset, like you mentioned, is important because we can kind of choose to put all of our energy on those few negative reviews or to put the energy on the 100+, not only reviews, but the people behind those reviews whom you're really helping with your product.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I've also found, you know, as a health psychologist, that oftentimes people who have these negative mindsets are in some ways more inclined to be ill and feel bad. And so if they continue in that mindset by slamming something that could be potentially useful for them, they're really only harming themselves in the long run.
Totally. And I see that too. And you can really tell, I mean, I feel like that mentality sort of comes out when you see a lot of excuses or you see the comparison of like, well, I've been sick longer or I've been sick worse or I have more symptoms than or whatever it is. And it's like, what do we really want to?
Today's podcast is sponsored by NutriSense. It combines cutting edge technology and human expertise so you can see how your body responds to different types of nutrition, stress, exercise, sleep, and where you are in your menstrual cycle in real time. And by pairing a continuous glucose monitor with their app and expert nutritional guidance, NutriSense can help you reach your health goals. And the best part is it's not just a program where they send you the CGM and you have to figure it out on your own. Each subscription plan includes 1 month of free expert nutritionist support. Your nutritionist will work with you one-on-one, interpreting your data and providing customized advice to help you reach your health goals. The last time I had my CGM on, my registered dietitian and I troubleshooted over some specific concerns that I had. And whether you're aiming to lose weight, stabilize your energy, or just feel better overall, NutriSense offers the guidance and support you need. And lasting sustainable change takes time and can be achieved through a longer-term subscription. That's why I encourage my patients and clients to consider 3, 6, or 12-month subscriptions where it's actually less expensive and allows you to not only achieve your goals, but also to ensure that you stick to your healthy lifestyle for the long term. As I've mentioned before, I have found the CGMs I've used through NutriSense to be incredibly insightful, specifically to carbohydrate tolerance. I would not have known that plantains spiked my blood sugar without this information. It's also been hugely helpful for tailoring to workouts and sleep quality. And so for me, even though I am metabolically healthy, I find the insights to be particularly helpful to tailor my lifestyle changes to my blood sugar. Visit NutriSense.io/EWP and use the code EWP WP for $30 off plus 1 month of free nutritionist support. Be sure to let them know you're a listener of the Everyday Wellness podcast when they ask you how you heard about them. This is one of my favorite ways to take care of my health and one of my top recommendations for all of my patients and clients. Consuming Element on a daily basis is one of my favorite ways to take care of my health. And we know that by consuming proper amounts of electrolytes, it can contribute to quality sleep, which is critical to all of my perimenopause and menopausal patients and clients. We know that magnesium increases a neurotransmitter called GABA that is known for producing calming effects. And consuming adequate levels of sodium can help you sleep through the night because low sodium levels increase cortisol and adrenaline. Additionally, if you are intermittent fasting, it's important to understand that when you fast, two things can dehydrate you. Number one, if your insulin levels remain low, it can signal to our kidneys to excrete more sodium or salt, a process called naturesis. And as glycogen or stored glucose is broken down, the water left over from the glycogen breakdown is urinated out. So if you want to take care of your health in one of my favorite ways, you can consume Element electrolytes. My favorite flavors are grapefruit and citrus, but there are many others to choose from. And if you go to drinkelement.com/Cynthia, you can get a free sample pack to try them out on your own. Again, it's drinkelement.com/Cynthia for your free sample pack where you can try all of their flavors.
Compete on how awful things right. are. Like, I feel like if you are not in the mindset to believe that you are going to heal and that this is a blip, but maybe a really long blip, maybe it's, you know, it takes years to get back to a place that you feel good about. But if you're not in it emotionally to believe in your own healing, then I don't think it happens, no matter mm-hmm. what you do.
Yeah, there definitely has to be a want and a desire to get those answers. I think mm-hmm. that, you know, for most of us, I don't think anyone's immune to this when we go through our own health challenges. And for me, I went from being ridiculously fit and not sleeping enough. And my diet was way too restrictive. I was too hardcore paleo, mm-hmm. you know, not enough starchy carbs. I didn't know enough about carb cycling. I didn't know about, you know, how that impacts your thyroid. And it wasn't until I totally crashed 3 years ago that all of a sudden it was very humbling to go through as a healthcare provider that, you know, trying to find those answers. And I wasn't satisfied with some of the people I worked with. And I remember, gosh, I mean, I have a really wonderful functional medicine provider locally who's also a good personal friend, and that's been helpful. But mm-hmm. working also with a really other very talented woman, that she's the one who figured it all out. Like, no one else could, but she did. Yeah. And so that's afforded me a quality of life that I wasn't sure I was going to have again. And here I am in a position, like so many of us, where, you know, trying to really support other people's health and not right. feeling like I was 100%. I was like, we got to get this back.
I know.
When you finally get there, you really appreciate it if you've had a health journey crisis. Totally. But for sure, for sure. I'd love to know how Legit Bride kind of came about. I'm sure it came out of all of this other creative expressiveness that you have. But clearly you must have found a void in the market and then, you know, to kind of troubleshoot it around that. But love to hear how that process came about.
So I'd love to say that I had some big master plan and that that I did, you know, all this market research, and it really sort of evolved not in that way. So I had in the kids' cookbook this recipe for a sandwich bread. And I had been trying for a while to really nail a sandwich bread that I felt like was worth putting a sandwich together for. There were so many that were almond flour based, which is fine, but I really try to gear more towards doing things that are nut free when I can, because in addition to wanting to be gluten free or grain free or paleo or whatever it is, I feel like with all the nut allergies, mm-hmm. And being a mother and knowing that, like, if you send an almond flour based bread sandwich to school, a lot of the time that's not going to be allowed. So let's do something better, and let's create a texture that's, you know, worth
palatable.
Yeah, exactly. you know what I mean. So, yes. I put the actual recipe together and I was really excited about it. And I had teased a lot on social media and said, oh my gosh, look what I have been able to do. I'm so excited. And I put pictures and I had this crazy response and outpouring of people begging me to sell the recipe. They're like, well, I don't have kids. I don't want to buy the book. I don't want to wait for the book. I'll still buy the book, but please, can I get that recipe right this minute? And I'm like, can you get this recipe right this minute? How do I do that? And I ended up selling the recipe as just a single recipe, sort of a la carte on my site for a while. And it sold like thousands and thousands and thousands of copies. And I thought, maybe, you know, I hadn't really wanted to have a product, at least not one that I was solely responsible for figuring out how to produce. I know a lot of people will do like private labeling on supplements and different things, and that is sort of easy, right? But when you are producing your own product start to finish and you don't have outside funding and you have to figure out who's going to manufacture the product and you have to figure out how that manufacturer is going to be a nut-free, certified gluten-free, kosher facility that, you know, allows your ingredient. It's just, it's so much. And so I really had no idea what I was getting myself into, but I did start thinking, if this many people love this recipe, that is telling me that there's nothing like it available to them on the market. And maybe I'm the one who needs to do this. And that was a big mistake. I'm just kidding. no, it was sort of, yeah, the beginning of the end. Like it's, I had no idea what I was getting into, but that is how it started. So I started researching. I talked to friends of friends who had small food companies and they said, well, are you going to have a co-packer? Are you going to, I'm like, what's a co-packer? Like, I just had no idea what I was getting into. But ultimately, I did the research. I figured by that point that there were enough people interested. I, as a consumer, I saw, you know, there were some products on the shelves. I didn't really care for any of them. I was using my own recipe, you know, more than I really wanted to buy what was there. So onward and upward we went. And I started with both the loaves. Actually, the loaves, the ready-to-eat loaves came out first. And I recently had to stop producing those because I went through three different bakers. And the problem is they're either really small bakers who are an allergen-friendly sort of situation, and they can do smaller runs for a company like mine, or they're really, really big producers and they want you to produce, you know, 10,000 loaves every week or something like that. And I thought, there's no way. Like, there's just no, I don't have anywhere to put them. I don't have that many retailers interested yet, all of it. So because I've had to go with smaller producers, I've had three bakers go out of business, unfortunately. And so I ended up this past summer, I had to make the executive decision that, you know, as much as I'd like to offer the loaves, I have to kind of put them to rest right now. And I hope maybe one day I can bring them back. As a military family, we're not done moving yet. And so I feel like when I have a little more stability, maybe it's something that I can, you know, look into. But for now, I do have four mixes. The mixes are a lot easier to get manufactured. I have some new mixes that will be coming. I'm working on an AIP bagel right now. And that yes, so it's nut-free, grain-free, gluten-free, dairy-free, soy-free, you know, just like it's made of sunshine and butterfly wings. But I'm trying to expand the mix line because I know that that is a little bit easier in terms of like if I were to lose a co-packer for the dry mixes, which I have, it's easier to find another one to pick up production. So that's sort of the direction we're headed. It started with, you know, a single recipe and sort of grew from there. And now I continue to just take notes from my customers and my readers and look at, you know, what are they missing? Like, what are they? So I get ideas from them all the time. They're like, we need a biscuit mix. We need a pizza crust mix, you know? And so I'm working on all of these things and I'm excited to see sort of what lies ahead.
That's amazing. I mean, I am so grateful, but in all those things, you know, especially as a parent with a child with nut allergies, I mean, that was for me always the biggest bugaboo, was just trying to find something that didn't have nut flour in it. Mm-hmm. Or a lot of the other options. I think I bought a pre-made, which will remain nameless, pre-made bread in the grocery store that was frozen. And uh-huh. I will never forget, I took it out. I think I'd made like a big thing of soup. I had, you know, family over, and my sister-in-law and her children are vegetarian. And so trying to find, you know, something that meets everyone's needs sometimes right. can be challenging. And so I took the bread out of the packaging, and my younger son looked at me and said, it smells like Wet Baxter, which is one of our dogs. And so said, it smells like wet dog. And everyone it was does. Like, I think we're going to pass. And so I said, I'm just going to put it back in the wrapper and I'm going to take it back to Wegmans and I'm going to explain to them that it's not even palatable, because it, whatever it was not inexpensive, but everyone kept uh-huh. talking about the bread that smelled like Baxter.
That so, smelled like dog. Yes. Yeah, exactly. We want to avoid that when at all possible.
Well, I think that your bread goes far and beyond just avoiding the dog smell.
Thank you. Well, I appreciate that. One of my small mini goals in running a bread company is
awesome.
Avoid dog.
Well, you have clearly learned a lot on your own health journey, and then in providing recipes and cookbooks and products that are palatable to folks who want to be healthy and folks who are healthy. And so we're just wondering if you could tell us two of your top tips for everyday wellness that you could share with the listeners.
Ooh, two of my top tips. I would say find foods that you enjoy that are also nutritious, because when you draw that sort of Venn diagram of what's healthy but what fills you up, you know, they don't always cross over. But when you can find that crossover, I feel like that's where you actually stick with it, and that's where you continue to live a healthy lifestyle and not just do these very short-term reset programs where you can do it for a couple weeks or you can do it for a month and then you go right back to eating the way that you were. The sustainability factor, I feel like, is really, really important in all of this, especially if you are trying to heal from something. It's not enough just to do it here and there. It's got to be all the time, or at least 90% of the time if you're trying to heal, maybe a little bit higher. And then at least 80% of the time, right, if you're just sort of maintaining. But when you can find that crossover of what you really love, that's also good for you. I feel like that's where your big wins come from. And then what's another tip? So I'm going to give a tip that I don't always follow. But I do think it's important. And I have a little bit more flexibility because I do stay at home, and so I can kind of brainstorm throughout the day. But I would say that meal planning is really good for people who are trying to stay on track. And so if you feel like it's easy to fall off by, you know, going to the office and seeing the plate of donuts and feeling like you can't say no, you're more likely to avoid those things if you already have something as a fallback. You know, if you bring your lunch and you know that you have delicious beef stew that's waiting for you from last night's Instant Pot meal that you planned ahead and made extra so you'd have those leftovers, then, you know, that preparation, I feel like, keeps you out of hot water. It's always when, you know, it's like going to the grocery store starving. You start looking at anything and you're just like willing to eat it right on the spot. If you go and you're fed, then you can show up and shop responsibly and buy the right things and put them in your cart. So I'd say preparation, whether it's meal planning, packing your lunch, knowing that if you're going on a road trip, that you are packing the right things, you know, the healthy jerkies, the healthy trail mix options, even like coconut oil based or avocado oil based potato chips. Like if you can pack ahead of time and if you can have a little bit of forethought, I feel like that sets you up for the most success for sticking with wellness.
Awesome. And we definitely want people to know where they can find you and where they can find your cookbooks and how they can get their your bread in their life. So please give us all those details.
Okay. You can find me at predominantlypaleo.com and also legitbreadcompany.com. The books are all available at Barnes & Noble, Amazon, wherever books are sold. And Legit Bread is in a few retailers across the U.S., but primarily I am an online-based business, so you can find them on Amazon Prime and my primary Legit Bread website.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for spending a little bit of time with us and for sharing your health journey and all of the amazing outcomes of that with us and with our listeners. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. Oh, well, thank you. I mean, you always hope that you can, you know, touch real lives, but sometimes you don't hear from everybody who you've had the blessing to affect. So I love getting feedback like that, too.
Oh, well, good. Well, good. Well, have a wonderful day.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for joining us. You can find out more about Cynthia and her work at chtwellness.com. And you can find out more about Kelly and her work at everydaytherapist.com. In addition, if you have questions for us or topics you'd like us to address, please email us at everydaywellnesspodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, be well.